Welcome, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're jumping into, well, a real treasure chest of practical wisdom. Our mission really is to pull out those key insights that can give you a genuine shortcut to being better informed about living a more effective life. We're talking about stuff you can actually use, knowledge that might just shift things for you, and maybe even for your whole circle of influence.
Yeah, and the source material for this is it's pretty unique. It's Vic Coleman's 100 Days to a Better Life Through Proverbs. And the way it came about is quite personal. The author talks about being on a 21-day fast, reading Proverbs, and it just hit him. He realized if he'd known and applied these principles earlier, well, he says it could have saved him a lot of headaches and heartaches.
That's such a relatable feeling, isn't it? That if only I knew then what I know now kind of moment.
Exactly. He felt like these verses really drilled down deep, made him take a hard, honest look at himself, his actions, thoughts, everything. He said it felt like nothing was hidden. And because it helped him so much, he started sharing little applications on his blog. Then after the fast, he just kept going. It turned into these Wednesday wisdom texts that got really popular. Like, people would actually text him if they didn't get it on time. And get this, they were even translated into Spanish and Korean. Shows you how much it resonated, I think.
Wow. Okay, so our goal for you in this deep dive is to really mine those nuggets, those actionable bits that offer that shortcut. We want to help you figure out what's really important for getting better outcomes, not just for you, but like you said, in that whole circle of influence. Right, let's get into it. So kicking things off, the source material really lays down a foundation. The author basically argues that what he calls God's inspired word, if you really engage with it, if you apply it, it has this power to bring about, well, almost inevitable change in your life. It gets right to the heart of things.
Yeah, and one of the first things he tackles, like day one, is framed by this question, are you a problem child? It's exploring that tendency some of us have to resist guidance, wanting to run the show ourselves, and how that can, you know, lead to trouble. He uses the parent-child correction idea. One kid gets it easily, another needs more effort and motivation, as he puts it. The point is, a reprimand or wisdom sinks in deeper if you have an open mind, a teachable spirit, compared to someone who's just resistant. He even pulls from historical accounts like in Isaiah, where big national challenges sometimes force people to finally listen and change.
That idea of being teachable, it's so central. And the source says the real prep work for wisdom isn't just learning facts. It's about our attitude. Day 88, the first step to becoming wise, really hammers this home. It says true wisdom starts with, in the author's view, a deep respect for and relationship with our Creator. Why is that the starting point for him?
That's a great point, because it leads to the next question. How do you even hear that wisdom? Day 28 uses this really cool analogy, a jazz musician developing a spiritual ear. Just like a musician needs to be super sensitive to the other players to make music great, not just okay, the author suggests we need that kind of sensitivity to God's voice, mainly through his word and the Holy Spirit. That's what gives direction, he argues, keeps you from just drifting or, you know, missing big opportunities.
Okay, so you develop this spiritual ear. What are you listening for? Day 52, follow the rule book, seemed to give a pretty direct answer. He presents God's commandments, his teachings, as basically a guide for daily life. Like, imagine a football game with no rules, total chaos, right? The source says, if you keep this rule book in your heart, your mind, your will, you're likely to have more peace, less chaos.
But, you know, it's interesting. Even if you want to learn, even with the rules, you can still block wisdom. Day 47 talks about wisdom blockers, and he compares pride to high blood pressure. Just like high blood pressure restricts blood flow, pride kind of chokes off the flow of wisdom and connection and the cure. Usually humility. Often, he says, life delivers it through tough times, relationship problems, disappointments, hard choices. Humility sort of opens things back up.
There's a really striking historical example he uses, too, in day 14, about Joshua. He contrasts the big win at Jericho, where they follow these very specific kind of weird instructions.
Marching around the city.
Yeah. Contrast that with the defeat at Ai later. There, they just figured, small town, easy win. They leaned on their own understanding.
It's like they're beaten.
Exactly. The lesson he pulls is that sometimes the obvious path is obviously wrong if you haven't sought wisdom first, even for the small stuff.
And that connects to another point. How committed are you when you're seeking it? Day 6, he talks about the conditional nature of God's blessings, as the author sees it. The source material is full of phrases like, if you receive, if you call out, if you seek. These actions, he argues, lead to God's protection, to victory. It suggests that being casual about it, kind of half-hearted, you probably get half-hearted results. Being all in tends to unlock the bigger benefits.
Okay, so that foundation of seeking wisdom is crucial. Then the material takes a big turn, focusing on the power of our words. It's pretty stark, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Day 33 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue.
Mm.
And the example given is dramatic. Those spies giving a negative report about the promised land.
Yeah, the 10 spies.
Right. And it led to millions, basically their whole community, wandering for decades, missing out. Words literally shaping destinies there.
And he really drills down on the cost of careless words in day 48. He doesn't pull punches, uses real-world examples from his experience or news, like an 18-year-old shooting a 12-year-old over an argument, or an employee whose negative talk wrecked her career path. The point is, harsh, careless words. They stir up anger, cause destruction, lives, careers, self-worth, all damaged.
And it's not just the obvious or nasty stuff. The source also looks at more subtle things, like messy words on day 97. Or even white lies, day 24.
Mm.
It says, even if you think you're telling the truth, if the timing's wrong or the way you say it or who you say it to, it can cause more harm than good. And those little white lies, the image used is powerful. Food gained by deceit is sweet, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel.
Ooh, yeah.
What seems easy or sweet now ends up feeling rough and bitter later.
So, okay, how do we manage this in everyday life? Day 40, a cool spirit points towards self-control. The author tells this funny, relatable story about having a really frustrating day, being totally wound up.
We've all been there.
Totally. He was ready to just, you know, let loose on someone, but then his dog came up, looked at him, and he felt like the dog's eyes were saying, chill, dude, it's not that bad.
From the dog.
Yeah, it made him stop and think. It illustrates how pausing, thinking before speaking, keeping that cool spirit stops you from acting foolishly or stirring things up. It links right back to day 23's boxing analogy. Don't react, respond. Choose a thoughtful response over just lashing out.
But it's not all negative, right? Words aren't just about avoiding damage. There's a huge positive side. Day 69, the power of a kind word, puts it so well. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down. But a good, encouraging word makes it glad. Just think about that.
Yeah.
Someone's having a rough time feeling anxious, and a few genuinely kind words from you, it could lift them up, change their whole moment, maybe even spark some hope. It's a simple thing we can all do.
So we've looked at seeking wisdom, the impact of words. Now let's shift to another big area the source covers, navigating life's choices. You know, our habits, our attachments, and the consequences that follow. It really kicks off strong, tackling what it calls the sluggard mentality, the danger of missing the season of opportunity. Days 5 and 9 warn about this. One who watches the wind will not sow. One who looks at the clouds will not reap.
Procrastination, basically.
Exactly. And the story of Tomas, the high school senior, it's a perfect illustration from the text. He missed a potentially life-changing company tour, internship chances, because he was just watching the wind thinking, I got time. It's like the farmer missing the planting season. You wait too long, you end up with nothing.
That's a wake-up call. And the source also gets into unhealthy attachments in day 45 and worthless pursuits in day 59. There's even that funny bit in day 10 about the author having an emotional attachment for old food in his fridge.
Yeah, I remember that one.
It's lighthearted, but it leads into more serious attachments, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How easily we cling to things that don't really serve us, maybe even hold us back from better things.
And speaking of attachments, day 66 presents this really provocative idea. Comfort plus convenience plus pleasure poverty.
Wow, okay. Unpack that.
Well, it points to examples like those multi-million dollar athletes, day 21 talks about this, who earn fortunes but end up bankrupt. Why? Often because of incredibly lavish lifestyles, just chasing pleasure. And day 77 connects this to comfort being a kind of common addiction. It can subtly keep us from stepping out, helping others, meeting real needs because we prioritize our own ease.
Then there's this incredibly insightful section, day 34, what's under the sheetrock? It's about integrity, transparency. He uses this analogy of building a house. Maybe the framing isn't quite right. Maybe there's some mold starting.
But you cover it up with sheetrock. Looks fine on the outside.
Exactly. Until years later, problems show up. He uses this to show how we try to cover our own flaws, our sins, maybe with a smile or distractions. We want to look good. But the core message is powerful. The author states, there's no hiding place with God. Days 44 and 95 echo this.
Mm-hmm.
He sees everything, the motives, the thoughts, the hidden stuff. It's a real call to be authentic, self-aware.
So with all these potential traps, bad habits, poor choices, hidden issues, how do we handle conflict without making things worse? Day 25 asks, are you looking for a good fight? And day 31 warns about unnecessary chaos.
Mm.
There's an anecdote about a professional wrestler he knew who, even after winning a point in an argument, still wanted to metaphorically jump out of the ring, go into the audience, just keep escalating things. The wisdom offered is to be slow to anger, to find honor in sometimes just letting things go, overlooking an offense. And day 43 uses the don't let the dam break analogy for relationships, neglecting them, taking them for granted, bad advice. It can lead to a total collapse.
And closely related is the warning about impulsive actions, about missing the mark. Day 96 covers this. The examples here are really sobering. Hasty decisions with huge long-term regrets. Things like jumping into a marriage, quitting a job impulsively, bad business deals.
Yeah.
Even people walking away from their faith in a moment of haste. Decisions where, looking back, the risks were clear, but the impulse just won out.
Yeah, ultimately, all these discussions about choices, habits, conflicts, it really boils down to a fundamental principle. Actions have consequences. Day 65 calls it the flip side. Whether you're working on your talents, like day 72 talks about, or chasing those worthless pursuits from day 59, the bottom line is you reap what you sow. It's just, well, unavoidable. Shapes everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's shift focus a bit to relationships, legacy, how we impact that circle of influence. The deep dive brings up what it calls a tragic irony in day 17, looking at Solomon.
The wise king himself.
Exactly. Famous for his wisdom, wrote much of Proverbs, yet the author points out, he stumbled badly because of his companions. He didn't apply his own wisdom. His affections apparently shifted, as the author puts it, from the Lord to 1,000 foreign wives and concubines who turned his heart away.
Wow, 1,000.
Yeah. It's a stark reminder about choosing friends wisely, day 98, and how much our associations shape us and our ultimate legacy.
But there's a really positive story here, too. Day 30, any poor among you, the author shares something from his own life. About his high school math teacher, a Mr. Schondelmeyer.
Okay.
The school didn't offer calculus, but this teacher used his free hour to teach it just to the author, an act of generosity. And that single act, it led to the author getting an engineering degree, then tutoring hundreds of students himself, starting a nonprofit.
Incredible ripple effect.
Totally. It perfectly illustrates day 55, taking generosity to a higher level. How lending to the Lord, as he phrases it, through kindness and service, can bring back these huge, unexpected rewards and create a real legacy.
So what does this mean for us, for you listening, in terms of how to live your life? Day 67 talks about embodying steadfast love and faithfulness. He uses the Hebrew word cheesed.
That's a powerful word.
It is. It's more than just niceness. It's this deep loyalty, faithfulness, dependability, like a rock in your relationships. And when we live like that, Day 71, how to have a good reputation, suggests that's how you find favor, how you gain good standing with others.
Which leads naturally to, well, how do we pass this kind of wisdom on, especially to the next generation? Day 100, raising children, and day 37, setting the tone, really dive into this. It uses the example of King David and his son Adonijah from day 38. Apparently, David never corrected or questioned his son's behavior.
Ouch. Hands-off parenting to the extreme.
Yeah. And the author argues this lack of guidance led directly to Adonijah becoming arrogant, rebellious, ending in a wall of disaster, day 68 calls it, for everyone involved. The point made is that intentional guidance, even discipline, actually leads to life and is really a sign of love.
And maybe a good way to wrap all these threads together is a question the source poses in day 87. Who's rooting for you? It really makes you stop and think, doesn't it? When you show up, are people genuinely glad to see you? Or maybe glad to see you leave? It's about reflecting on the kind of impact you're having, the kind of ripple, as the author puts it, you're creating in your own world.
So as we finish this deep dive, looking at all this wisdom from Proverbs through the author's lens, it's pretty clear, isn't it? These ancient ideas, they're still incredibly relevant today. Really practical stuff. From having that teachable heart, understanding our words, making better choices, to how we treat people. It all connects.
Absolutely. And it's worth saying again, wisdom isn't just about knowing things. It's about doing things. It's applying these insights, whether they come from ancient texts like this or modern research, applying them to actually get those better outcomes in your life.
Right. So here's something to maybe chew on as you go about your day. If, as our source suggests, God sees everything, even what's under the sheetrock in your life, what's one area he might be nudging you to bring into the light today? What might need a deeper dive into his wisdom in your own life right now?